you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
I'm Austin Cross. Join me for LAist's new live event series with the James Beard Foundation. We Are Where We Eat will go behind the scenes of LA restaurants. The kickoff event is May 22nd. Tickets at LAist.com/events.
We are kicking off a second hour of Air Talk here on KPCC, on your radio at 89.3 or on your smart speaker. You can ask it to play KPCC. Kyle Stokes here for Larry Mantle today. Sharon McNary steps in tomorrow and for the rest of the week. 15 months ago, I first figured out that Los Angeles Unified campuses were closing while on the phone with a middle school teacher. He told me, sounding a little bit stunned, they're letting the laptops get more than 6 feet from the cart. Normally, they don't let that happen. I think we're going online. That was like March, let's just say March 10th of 2020. And at the time, this teacher said it would be a bumpy transition, but he was optimistic that online learning would work well. Just a few months later, we talked again, and the shine for him had completely worn off of online classes. Zoom, he said, had stripped out a lot of the joy of teaching and learning. And for me, that was the anecdote that encapsulated a lot of the experience with distance learning in California schools. Now, most California schools are planning to return to campuses 5 days a week next fall. And while parents can still opt their kids into online programs if they're uncomfortable with in-person instruction, the online options are going to be more limited. Yet, especially recently, I've also heard from a lot of parents who are going to miss this online environment. They say their kids thrived. There are numerous students that have told me that they're not going to miss the social pressures of in-person classes. So let's do a big debrief over this next hour here on Air Talk. Parents, students, especially teachers, principals, counselors, folks who are working in schools, we want to hear from you this hour. I'm hoping that you're going to take a moment to call in 866-893-KPCC and answer this question. What is the one thing about distance learning that you hope schools keep doing next year? And what is the one thing about distance learning that you hope we never see again? Either or both, answer that question for us at 866-893-KPCC. That is 866-893-5722 or the Air Talk page at kpcc.org. You can also tweet us here at the show at Air Talk or at me, KY Stokes. And with us to help us talk through these questions is a roundtable of teachers. First, I'll introduce Jessica Gutierrez, a physics and chemistry teacher at Samo High in the Santa Monica Malibu Unified School District. Jessica, thank you so much for being here.
You're very welcome.
And Sonia Carney is with us as well, fifth and sixth grade teacher at Deerfield Elementary in Irvine Unified. Sonia, thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
Ashley McGrath is a kindergarten teacher at Roland Elementary School in the Roland Unified School District, also co-host of a podcast about literacy called Between the Ladies. Ashley, thank you for your time this morning.
Super excited to be here.
And Miguel Covarrubias is a 10th and 11th grade history teacher at Ramon C. Cortinez School of Visual and Performing Arts in downtown LA, also sometimes controversially known as Grand Arts. Miguel, thank you so much for your time as well.
Thank you very much.
And again, hoping to hear your reflections about distance learning at 866-893-5722 or on the Air Talk page at kpcc.org. Let's go around the group here. Jessica, Sonia, Ashley, and Miguel, what is the one thing? Let's start with what is the one thing about distance learning that you hope to never see again? Jessica, why don't we start with you?
So I'm a science teacher. I teach physics and chemistry, the best part about science is, you know, getting your hands on things and manipulating them and having kids learn by exploring. So, I mean, the whole Zoom teaching, I wouldn't hate it if I never had to do that again and experiment online again. It's hard. It's hard to get – we tried to do a couple different platforms, but it's hard to get kids engaged in those real, like, manipulative parts of our class, which is what a lot of kids really enjoy about science classes.
And what I understand is you actually had to go out and get a grant for chemistry kits to actually make some of that happen.
I did. I wrote a grant like through Donors Choose, and I'm very lucky. It got funded by some people in our community, some random people, some of my family members. And I made these little kits, and I parked my car outside school, and the kids would like drive up, and we'd have our masks on. And that was actually the first time I met some students, you know, because my district started the year online, like pretty much all of the districts in LA. So I'd hand them their kit, and then we'd go, and a week later we try, but some kids never were able to get them because, you know, everyone's life circumstances.
Right.
But we tried, but even that, you know, cameras off, I couldn't really see what they were doing. And some of the kids loved it, but once we were back in school this last month, it was like night and day. They really thrived in that environment.
Right. Ashley McGrath, you're a kindergarten teacher. What is the thing about distance learning that you hope we never, ever, ever see again?
Well, one of the big parts of kindergarten is it's the kids' very first experience in school. So we have 4 and 5 year olds coming to school for the very first time. And for me, it would be so much of the desk shields and the social distancing, because for kindergarten, we're all about learning to share. And that's so much part of what it means to be part of a school community. It's part of what it means to belong to something. And so in kindergarten, we teach so many of these lifelong skills to build empathy, to share, to be kind to your friends and your neighbors. And in distance learning, whether on Zoom or in person, there is none of that sharing. And so that's what I miss the most.
Sonia, you taught in the Irvine Unified School District. You teach in the Irvine Unified School District, and you actually spent a lot of this last year teaching in person. So I am curious to know, what is the thing about distance learning that you hope we never see again, and how you come at that question from the perspective of someone who, of the two options that were offered in your district, you chose to do the in-person option. How do you come at that question?
Yeah, so I had a 5-6 combo, and we started in person in September 24th, 5 days a week, all day. But I had the kids split into two different classrooms. Throughout the year, I gained some kids that came from the virtual, the distance learning, just because their parents shared with us the difficulty they were having at home, whether it be, you know, educational or just emotional, not having the interaction with the other students. So having them come in back in person was a huge help to those kiddos.
Right.
It was a definite, a lot of teachers wanted to be back in person because teaching the kids virtually was just so difficult, as the others have already mentioned.
Yeah. What was the thing that you heard most about why it was difficult to teach in that setting?
It was really hard to engage the kids.
Mm.
You couldn't see them very well, like what they were doing. And you know, they looking at a screen, it's just hard to keep their attention for a long period of time.
Yeah. We want to hear your reflections as well. If you're a parent, a student, an educator, anyone, a teacher, a principal, a counselor, someone who works in schools, we want to hear your reflections on these questions. What's the one thing about distance learning that you hope schools keep doing over the next year? What's the thing that you think we should adapt for the future? And conversely, what's the one thing about distance learning that you hope goes in the dustbin and we never bring back ever, ever, ever again? 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-5722 or the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. Miguel Covarrubias at Cortina's School of Visual and Performing Arts. How do you answer that question about the thing that you hope we never see again from distance learning?
I've been complaining about deleting Zoom as soon as we go back in person. It's just such an impersonal experience. You know, part of being a teacher is connecting with your students, building relationships. It's hard to create and maintain relationships if you don't really know students. And part of the physical experience of talking to a student is how you get to know them. And so I think what was really disheartening was how many students I lost as a result of just them not being able to sustain being on Zoom. They just couldn't do it. It was difficult. And it's, for me, it was like teaching with blinders on, because I construct lessons and activities based on the people in the room. And if I can't see the people in the room, it's really hard.
Yeah. Well, so there's a theme. One of the themes of this is that there's something about the interpersonal relationships in teaching and education that I think at least two of our roundtable members have mentioned here. As we're talking through this issue, let's go to the phones and get to some of the folks who've been waiting patiently to share their thoughts about what are the things about distance learning we should keep, what are the things about distance learning we should never hear about again. We heard from a chemistry teacher just a minute ago. I think probably if you want to think of a subject that's more difficult to teach than chemistry with engaging, it would be music, especially if it's instrumental music. And Sarah is on the line from El Sereno. Sarah, go ahead. What is the thing that you want to forget?
To be quite honest with you, if I could take a magic pill and forget this entire year, I 100% would take that opportunity.
Yeah. What was it? Are you teaching? And you're teaching instrumental music, right?
I teach middle school band in Southeast LA. And my subject just really doesn't exist in an online format. And so most of us get into education not because of the pay, but because of the passion we have for the students and our subject. And it was just a heartbreaking year all year long.
One of the lasting images of the pandemic for me is of that kid in a tuba tent. I believe the photo is from Washington State, but he sort of was covered in, it looked like a tiny, like, little pop-up tent with sort of plastic around the front so that he could at least see the conductor of the band. It was completely absurd because it barely fit over the tuba. Is that one of the adaptations that you had to use? Did you ever have an in-person experience this year, or was it all, like, lessons over Zoom? Kids playing the clarinet, trying to make sure that the audio synced up and that kind of thing.
Well, it's funny you bring that up. I'm actually originally from Washington State.
There you go.
And all year long, I got to see colleagues being innovative in the ways of just making music together. And if I had little tents for my kids, I would do it in a heartbeat. But we were not allowed to play together all year long. We never made music together. There's no way to sync up audio over Zoom. Anything we had to do had to be individual and then piecemealed together by me, who's not an audio or video engineer. If I could have the opportunity that my colleagues around the country did to actually make music collaboratively with their students, no matter if I was in a tiny tent, I would have done that.
Sarah, thank you so much for calling in. Carlos in Long Beach says, I'm a professor, and one thing I plan to continue doing as a result of the pandemic is virtual office hour visits. It's been a great benefit for both students and for teachers. Taking your calls and comments about what about distance learning we should continue doing in schools going forward, and what about distance learning do we just need to give up the ghost on here? 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722. Or the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. The pandemic, very difficult for young students, and Melody teaches young students in East LA. You're calling from La Brea. Melody, welcome to AirTalk.
Hi, good morning. My name is Melody, and I teach first grade. And something that I really enjoyed from distance learning is being able to teach 6 and 7 year olds how to use Google Classroom. It was really amazing to see them persevere and be able to navigate Google Classroom, use Google Slides, Google Sheets, Google Docs, Google Forms. And I think that's something that we should definitely continue doing, get them on the computers, give them the skills to be successful in the 21st century.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of amazing. You said first graders and they're poking around on the computers. You sort of don't picture a first grader sometimes as being like, you know, dexterous enough to get through that. I mean, that's sort of the mental image that I have. And I meet first graders a fair bit in my job. And I just like understanding that that's a misconception seems like a really big moment for educators. I mean, do you agree?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And it was really hard for them to learn how to use the keypad. So they're not even using a mouse. They're using the keypad on their Chromebook. So they're clicking and then dragging, moving boxes, enlarging things, making them smaller, searching for pictures and images, and toggling back and forth between educational apps. So they're on Zoom and then going on to a reading app, going on to a math app, and all the while going on to their assignments that are being pushed out. So I think it's something that we should definitely not be afraid of and continue to teach, because
They learn quick and they're able to do it and be successful.
Very interesting. Melody, thank you so much for calling in. And that's a perfect intro to another member of our roundtable here, which is whose name is Greg Knotts, who is the incoming chair of the Elementary Education Department at Cal State University Northridge. Professor Knotts, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm curious to know what your reaction is to that observation from Melody that first graders are a lot better on computers than we give them credit for, and that was one of her big takeaways of distance learning.
Well, I think Melody has the same theme that everyone who has spoken so far has, and that speaks to the perseverance and the resilience of students. And then in large part, what she's referring to, I think, is exactly what brain researchers would say about our brains. Our brains are simply going to be differently wired than a first grader's brain. Their connections are getting, their schema are being formed. All of those neural pathways are being formed differently than ours. So it is no wonder that they have the resilience and the perseverance because they don't know anything different. We are having to both learn and unlearn those kinds of skills where they're simply having to learn because it's normalcy. So I think that there's a real power to what Melody and others are saying to that notion of resiliency and that engagement with that kind of delivery system.
Right. Greg, you as a big part of your job is preparing elementary educators for the classroom. And I'm just curious what it was like doing that task while everyone else was trying to learn themselves how to navigate this environment.
Well, the learning themselves, Kyle, is the exact theme, I think, of everyone's experience in the last year and a half. I was very, very transparent with my students because I felt a bit disingenuous since I'd never done it myself. I had taught in the classroom for 10 years, but certainly not in the way that I was preparing these teachers to do it. I couldn't say, oh, I managed 37 kids in third grade this way online because I'd simply never done it myself. I was relying, to be quite honest, on my master's students who are presently current teachers, but somehow, again, speaking of resiliency, decided to go get their master's during this period of time. So I was learning a great deal from them. There was a real respect, a reciprocal respect of I know the system of education. I know the structure of education. I was a successful teacher myself, and I certainly studied it for 25 years. But there was a real leaning on my students who are master's students to say, hey, I got a class of freshmen tomorrow. How can I help them understand and navigate Google Classroom in a way that's practical, in a way that's implementable? What's a trick that you're trying? So it was a really neat experience in that regard. We always learn more from our students than they learn from us. So in that way, it was very, very helpful. At the same time, a big semicolon, at the same time, it was no fun for anybody because every day felt like brand new. Every day felt like you had no, very little kind of experiential control over what you were trying to share with students. So in that part, it was a bit frustrating. But like everyone has been saying, there are things that you absolutely will want to emulate next year and things that you absolutely, I think Carlos said, throw in the trash.
Yeah.
And
that is exactly the question that we are trying to talk through here during this entire hour on Air Talk. And we would love your thoughts on it as well, especially from parents, students, and educators. Call us 866-893-5722. Again, that's 866-893-5722 or the Air Talk page at kpcc.org. More of your observations coming up in just a moment. We're going to talk about video and Zoom lectures. Stay with us. We're talking about distance learning here on KPCC and debriefing the crazy year that was in education and asking the question, what about distance learning should we never, ever, ever see again in schools? And what about it is worth keeping? Is there a kernel of truth worth carrying forward? Sylvia in Inglewood told us that she's a university supervisor and supervises teacher interns in the class. And giving kids the option not to be on camera, she thinks, was a mistake. They were less engaged. On the other hand, we have Caroline on the phone from East LA. And you also had some observations about keeping cameras on or off in the classroom. Caroline, thank you for being with us on Air Talk.
Yeah, my conclusion was that the conversations that teachers had to have and the knowledge they had to gain about the circumstances in which our students live that are part of why they may or may not have wanted to have their cameras on, that conversation and thinking about who lives where and how do they feel about it and what are they willing to share about their home, that we have to keep that. And then the other thing of, as a high school principal, we had to have conversations about how teenagers feel about their faces and how it feels to have to look at your own face on Zoom for 90 minutes, and that the psychological reality of adolescent development that we had to talk about and think about and learn about as a school, we need to keep that. We need to keep that depth of detailed awareness of teenagers' reality. And we should not drop that post-pandemic. And we need to continue learning about who our kids are and how they feel about themselves and their circumstances and their homes and their lives.
Yeah. Caroline, you're it says here that you're the principal of a high school in East LA, and I'm curious how you're going to carry forward that learning. I mean, especially if, you know, distance learning, especially in Los Angeles Unified, is going to be done through sort of a separate program. They're not going to be, you know, part of your school. They're not going to have a class schedule at their school if they're going to have distance learning. So how do you carry forward that idea that, like, these kids are walking into our classrooms with some, you know, varying levels of home circumstances, and how do you sort of access that and account for that?
I think that just like we had to rethink from the ground up, like, how do you plan a lesson for kids who you can't see and who won't necessarily respond right away? I think we have to completely transform how we plan instruction, and it has to include and be centered on building community first. Before we deliver one piece of academic information, it has to include that we talk about and include and open up the doors for kids to talk about the circumstances of their lives and the circumstances of their feelings and emotional development and psychological understanding of themselves. Mm-hmm. That has to be part of every class, including chemistry and U.S. history. It can't be other. It can't be just in homeroom. It can't just be for the counselors. It has to be everywhere.
Yeah, it has to be sort of baked into how this is done. I would love to unpack a little more the questions of what we learned about camera norms in Zoom lectures, because I had my own little tiny window into this. I taught as an adjunct instructor at Cal State Northridge a journalism class, and that was one of the big takeaways, is that students did not want to turn on their cameras. And I think that, as Caroline points out there, and thank you, Caroline, for calling in with that observation, there's a lot going on with this. So I want to kick this question over to our teacher roundtable here and ask their sort of reflections and what they learned about teachers, about students, and their willingness to turn on their Zoom camera. If we could, let's start with Jessica Gutierrez, who taught physics and chemistry at SAMO High. Did your students turn on their cameras? What was the etiquette around that in your classroom?
So there was no real rule set, but in the beginning of the year, more kids did, for sure. It was kind of like the beginning. I think everyone was, like, excited, not sure how long it was going to, I don't know about excited, but, you know, just the beginning of the year hype. And as the year went on, I think I saw less and less. But as she just said, I also know that my students, you know, some might be embarrassed of where they live, or they're sharing the Wi-Fi with everyone. So that was totally fine. I'd often say, okay, you know, here's our warm up for today. I'd love to see your beautiful faces for a few minutes, and then you can turn them off. And some kids would, you know, a handful of kids every day would turn their cameras on for a little bit to just kind of say hello and then turn them off. Or if I went into a breakout room, I'd often put kids in individual breakout rooms during independent work time. That way, if they had questions or something, they, you know, wouldn't be embarrassed in front of their classmates. I'd say, hey, if it's just me and you, you know, I'd love to see your face. Again, it was open. You know, but for the most part, I mean, maybe a third of my class did it normally, and that was on the higher end. By the end, not so many. And what was really interesting for me, I'm also the mom of a five-year-old. My son started TK this year. So mm-hmm. as one of the teachers on the panel saying, you know, not ideal for him starting elementary school, but they were, like, all on. If I walked out on a break, like, they're dancing. It was like polar opposite high school to elementary school. Like, they couldn't wait. So.
Yeah. Well, Ashley McGrath, also on our teacher roundtable here, you teach kindergarten in Roland Unified. And I mean, was that true in your classroom? Cameras were always on?
Totally. I didn't even have to ask kids to turn cameras on. When you're 4 and 5, you want to see yourself. You want to see your friends. And so our kids, our cameras were pretty much always on. And yeah, we were dancing. We were singing together. Our kids like to be spotlighted. And so they like to see their face big on the screen. And they really, I think, in a way, there was almost more, could be some more individual attention because they were so excited to share their work with their friends and their peers. And so that was really fun to not only see our kids, but to see their families, because for our little ones, the parents would come on if they had a question. I saw so many of our kids and their older siblings, their middle school and high school siblings who were at home with them, who came to help them. And so in a way, it was so beautiful to know everyone in their families, all of their aunties and grandparents and cousins. And I felt that was really beautiful, too.
Sonia Carney is a 5th and 6th grade teacher at Deerfield Elementary in Irvine Unified. And Sonia, you taught in person for the lion's share of the last year. But I'm curious to know about how you mentioned you saw a lot of students that moved from distance learning into the classroom. The caller, Caroline, was bringing up that there is, you know, sort of the need that to bring forward this idea that we need to know what's going on in students' homes and problems that they might be bringing with them to school, even if they're not visible problems. And I'm curious just like whether you're sort of living in the future to some places that have been doing distance learning for longer. Was there any way that you could sort of bring that forward, that those issues sort of presented themselves as you were teaching through still the height of the pandemic?
Yeah, we started in distance learning and then came back in person. And, you know, the kids were really excited to be back in person and the parents were so thankful and grateful. As the year went on, the kids were a little bit more open about distance learning. And what most of them did not like it. That's why they were in person. And the main thing that a lot of them said is they would just, you know, their parents would be working. A lot of them were kind of on their own. I had 5th and 6th graders, so they knew all of the, you know, the Google things that they needed. But a lot of them would just, they'd turn off their cameras after some time. And then a lot of them admitted they'd play games or they would, you know, watch YouTube or things like that. So they were having more difficulty just, you know, they didn't have an adult near them to watch them and with their cameras off, because some would leave them on and some would leave them off. And it just depended on what they were doing. And it was just hard for them. When they came back, they started admitting how much they really didn't like the online, and in person was much more beneficial to them.
Right. Let's go to the phones. We've got several folks who've been waiting very patiently to weigh in. Let's go to Brenda in Long Beach. Brenda, you work at El Camino College. You're an administrator there. What are the things that you hope to bring forward from distance learning, lessons learned that you hope to institute permanently?
Well, I work with our veteran students, and distance learning provided another platform of learning. I think it gave all of our students the ability to have an extra choice in how they learn and what they did with their time. The veterans, we did a survey, and for the most part, some of them wanted, you know, in classroom learning, and there were some subjects that absolutely students required in classroom learning. But the vast majority liked the idea of being able to have the choice of distance learning. What most of the students wanted, though, was to have the resources of the college available to them. And our center was like a hub for the veterans, and we provided a number of things, like we had meetings and we had clubs and we had food and luncheons and those types of things. So the supportive social services that most schools provide needed to be accessible to the students, and that you can't get from distance learning.
Yeah.
All in all, I think it has been, we have seen a positive experience, and I'm a student too. I'm in a doctorate program, and I love to be able to do my class at 2 a.m. in the morning because I work during the day.
Right. And it's that community, as you were saying just a minute, especially with groups like veterans programs, where that's so important to have that community where you can sort of have folks who are keeping you accountable, I'm imagining. Brenda, thank you so much for your comment here as we're talking through and debriefing distance learning here on AirTalk. We got a couple of comments actually about curriculum and curricular concerns. So those two comments that I want to kick around here, let's see, from Zeta in Anaheim. I'm a world languages teacher, and I think it's good to cut the fat from the curriculum. We did that at the beginning of the pandemic, and I'll definitely keep this new curriculum going forward. Sarah from Santa Monica says, I'm a parent of an elementary school child. My child has done great because of the ability to look back at lessons. I hope that's kept because having the ability to use those pre-recorded lessons as a way to help my daughter was a great tool. Let me bring in Professor Greg Knotts from Cal State Northridge, incoming chair of the Elementary Education Department there. And Greg, I mean, just what I heard that particularly that cut the fat comment early on in the pandemic, that it's a hard lesson for some teachers to learn that simpler is better. Less content is not necessarily more. Is that a takeaway for your students that you're preparing for the classroom as a result of this?
Sure, I'd say unequivocally, because every teacher has to do, a number of things simultaneously in a classroom. They have to behaviorally engage kids, cognitively engage kids, and emotionally engage kids. And at least in the K-5 environment, that is kind of the world in which I inhabit, not every moment of every 8-hour school day is spent on cognitively engaging kids. So it's been embedded in so many of the comments that people have said. So much of school is about socialization and sharing and engaging with others to do some positive interdependence of, work together. So not every moment is about cognitive engagement with curriculum. So I think that's, and any teacher knows that already, but I think what the system of education has uncovered is that's why some of these kids only spent 90 minutes online, because 90 minutes of the actual delivery of content was probably sufficient, at least in the short term. I don't think it's sustainable over the long term. It obviously is, because you can get a K-12 education online already. It's not as if distance learning has never existed before. So a very small percentage of people already do this. But I think most of us who have been called to education or have been engaged in actual delivery in a brick and mortar system of education for the last little bit of our lives, we realize that school is so much more. And I think that's what the larger population is uncovering, is that it is so much more than delivery of content. So I love that metaphor of trim the fat, because, you could read what you needed to learn from a book, but that's not entirely what going to school, this thing we call school, is about. It really is about being a microcosm of society. So that in that part, I think that teachers will gain that back and stop just focusing on the delivery of content, which is such a big part of what the Zoom environment required. Mm.
On Twitter, comment, what should we never have again? Zoom classes with lack of focus, inability to, quote, see the whole group. I wish we could keep the students' pets as part of our classes. I got to know a bunch of cats and dogs, a little bit of levity. I agree. We should keep Zoom babies, Zoom cats, Zoom dogs as a part of things here in the mix going forward. We are debriefing distance learning, though, and the particular implications of what distance learning and our experience with distance learning mean for schools going forward post-pandemic. This is Air Talk on KPCC, back after a 2-minute break. We are debriefing distance learning here on Air Talk on KPCC, here on the radio at 89.3 and streaming at kpcc.org. The driving question for this hour, we really have two questions. One is, what is one thing about distance learning that we should keep? And what is one thing about distance learning that you hope is never seen in schools again? Let's go to the phones and Raphael in West LA. Raphael, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. One thing that I noticed about Zoom that I appreciated was that students that normally would not speak in classrooms on discussions were actually sending me direct messages on chat when they were unsure about something. And when they were sure about something, they send in the message to everyone on chat. So I was actually students that, and I knew these students since before the COVID separation into Zoom classes. And I was getting more participation in classroom regards to conversations. And that's something I'd like to keep. Like, I wish I could keep the kids on Zoom and in the classroom at the same time.
Yeah.
So that I can get those kids that are trepidatious about wanting to talk, sending me those direct messages.
Yeah. It's like you need an in-classroom, like, Slack channel or something like that. Rafael, that's an interesting observation. I'm going to kick it over to a fellow 10th and 11th grade teacher, Miguel Covarrubias of Ramon C. Cortinez School of Visual and Performing Arts in downtown Los Angeles. Miguel, what did you notice about participation? Better, worse, via distance learning?
Well, actually, it's interesting you asked that because I had a conversation with one of my friends who was a history teacher as well. And I told her that I was doing breakout rooms. And she told me, wow, you're still doing breakout rooms. And I said, yeah, I haven't given up. And because what I would do is I would use the, I'm not someone that lectures the whole, I don't really, I'm not a big lecturer. So what I would do is I would use breakout rooms as a way to have students discuss. And so I would go into the breakout rooms and go one by one. And I did notice that my students were talking, but I also noticed that they were also using the chat. So I did know there was an uptick in like participation, but there was, it kind of stayed stable. Like I was expecting it would be a big drop off, but my students surprised me, especially the ones I knew prior prior to COVID. They kept up those discussions. So my first period was notorious for using the chat. So I would see like 250 comments by the time I was
chat
done.
Chat overload.
Yeah, and they also were really big. And so our classes were 90 minutes in the beginning. And so we would go almost all the way because they wanted to keep discussing the topic, right? So I would have to say, okay, we're going to have to go and I'll see you later. So it was depending on each class. Some classes were more engaged in discussion and others were less engaged.
Hmm. First of all, thank you, Rafael, for your call. Let's go back to the phones again. And Barry in Eagle Rock, you've been teaching high school for quite some time. So your reflections on this past year.
Well, thanks. I think like a lot of us, we were mystified when we saw that article in The Atlantic by Gene Twenge back in October of 20 about how great some students were doing and that they were thriving online. And we all scratched our heads and said, what the heck? And I think as someone who teaches sort of the more advanced technical side of high school curriculum, I teach composition, and a lot of other fellow teachers who do stuff like this, they teach trigonometry, they teach calculus, AP history, where students are doing analysis, so forth, where there's a lot of skills teaching, there's a lot of demonstration, you have to have students do stuff. In those subjects, what I really noticed was just that students had a tendency who were emotionally ready to be engaged in the material really got a lot out of the online format because it's extremely centering. That is, you have your entire task framed on what's right in front of you. Imagine an entire class correcting the same outline on a Google Doc together. Mm. Imagine everybody looking at the same calculus problem together. And for students who are in the game, that's enormously powerful because they have no other distractions and the screen foregrounds what the material actually is.
You mentioned distractions, Barry, and I'm just curious if you would take this temporary reprieve in like, I mean, did you feel a reprieve? I don't want to assume the premise here. Did you feel like there was a reprieve in like classroom management stuff? Like there weren't kids acting off in the back corner and, you know, there weren't as many behavioral issues that you had to deal with. Would you take that trade again? Or was there no reprieve? Was it still difficult to manage?
Interesting question. Kind of a false dichotomy. Actually, the behavior issues were worse because in classes like mine, the behavior issue isn't a student acting up. It's a student not participating. And so the level of non-participation for students who weren't really on the work to begin with really got magnified. They were exacerbated by the online format. And I think the test I would have for all the adults is say, what did it look like the last time you were in a staff meeting on Zoom? And how much of the time did you spend zoning out? And when somebody asked for you to participate, how freely did adults actually share their ideas and collaborate the way the platforms promise? I think it wasn't that it was overpromised. I think there was a naivete on a lot of people's part about just how much people really want to participate when they see a body of everybody else staring back at them. And that's a powerful disincentive for students to participate all around, just like adults. And it's only when they're really in the game of doing the work that those other electronic tools really leverage positive results.
Barry, appreciate your time and thank you so much for your call. Larry in Alhambra, you're a home teacher. What does that mean to be a home teacher? And maybe include that in your reflections about distance learning here. What did it mean? And was there no difference in what you were doing? Or was this very different because you mean like you actually teach in students' homes?
Well, a home teacher teaches students who are not able to go to school because of an injury or sometimes mental health or behavior. So before the pandemic, I went from house to house. And during the pandemic, of course, I did it by Zoom.
Did it? So are you in a realistic position where Zoom is likely to continue to be a part of your life? Or are you going back at this point mostly to in-person meetings with your clients?
I'm hoping to go back to in-person. I would say that for the teaching that I do, Zoom was a mixed bag, probably more negative than positive. And I think if I tell you about two different students, you'll see that. One student I had was a selective mute, and one of my goals with her was to get her to talk to people. And I used Zoom a lot to, you know, connect her with different people, starting with people she knew. And then we ended up doing a call to Israel to learn about Passover.
Wow. So this was a real eye-opener, a tool that could really move her into the, you know, kind of take her out of her shell. I'm not fully read up on what the issues are that cause a person to have a situation like that. What about the other student that sort of encapsulated this for you?
Okay, the other student is a special ed student from a home that's not really tech savvy. And there was just one technical problem after another. You know, sometimes it took really long for him to respond to the invitation. I eventually got really frustrated with doing Zoom with him, and we did it by phone, but I couldn't teach math by phone effectively at all.
Because you can't see the math problems or anything like that if there's no screen or anything that you can share. That had to be really frustrating.
The other thing I found that was a very effective tool was Google Docs.
Yeah. Right. This is big winners in all of this. Google Docs and Zoom, among the other things. Google Classroom is another platform that you heard. I actually heard there were some people who really wanted to try out Teams and other different Microsoft spaces. There are so many different platforms that people were excited about. Then again, that was one of the platforms that the person I mentioned at the very beginning of this hour, he was so excited to try out that platform. Larry, we have to go to break. I'm going to let you go. I really appreciate you sharing your experiences from a little bit of a different perspective as a home teacher, sort of a non-traditional setting. We are wrapping up our debrief on distance learning, what worked, what didn't, what should we keep, and what should we throw into the dustbin, the educational dustbin. We will be back after a 1 minute break here on Air Talk. Back here on Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC, we're talking about distance learning and debriefing the crazy, crazy year that was in California classrooms and classrooms all across the country. And some learning, of course, doesn't take place in classrooms. It takes place in gyms and on tracks and fields. And that's where Charles teaches, a physical education teacher at Hollywood High School. Charles, thanks for being with us on Air Talk. What was your distance learning experience like?
Thank you so much. Yes, well, you know, the objective of physical education is to keep kids moving and to motivate them to find ways to stay active. And a lot of this cannot be done online, and therefore Zoom was not an ideal setting for us to hold class. However, what we did do is we would discuss ways for us to enjoy physical activity on an individual basis. Obviously, in class, we would learn by way of a lot of dual play or team play. However, the pandemic offered an opportunity for us physical education teachers to encourage students to find their niche in terms of what they like to do and what they enjoy
as
physical activity. And so we would talk about things such as hiking and encouraging them to get out and take walks and ride their bicycles. Or we even did a unit on beach safety. And so those are some things that were very ideal and very successful.
Interesting. I mean, so was there any, I mean, did you focus on individual sports when you talk about people finding their comfort level? I mean, was it, you talk about some of the sort of like health class style lessons. Were students able to get any exercise in there? Or while they were on Zoom with you? Like, were you having students weightlifting on Zoom, or was that not a part of your class? I'm just really curious about how it would work.
Sure. So our district at the secondary level, the high school level, we were not allowed to mandate that students turn on their cameras.
Right.
That was not an option for us. However, what we did do is we had an internet log where students would go out and participate in various activity that they most enjoyed. And then they would come back online and report what they did. And then we talk about those things as a class. And then hopefully, you know, perhaps someone went out to the beach and they did some jogging, and that piqued someone else's interest in saying, hey, let me get out and go to the beach and do that, something that they may have never considered. And so we talked about various things that students would do on an individual basis to hopefully get them moving again, as our targeted objective is to motivate them to move and to stay active.
Right. Charles, and as a lot of people, some people got more active during the pandemic. Some people did not get more active during the pandemic. So thank you for trying to make sure that folks are actually active, that students were actually able to be in that column of things. Charles from Hollywood High School, thank you so much for being with us. Let's go to another teacher who has, we heard earlier from one of the teachers on our roundtable, a chemistry teacher trying to do labs via distance learning was no fun. I have to imagine that Julie, as an engineering teacher in Lenox, not quite a simple task to teach students to do robotics over Zoom.
I'm Julie, and we were doing this great engineering program. We had kids who were, they were using, like, they would program a computer. We had a computer chip and a breadboard, so they had to wire that, and then they had to make it do things, and it was all project-oriented, so you'd have kids in groups of three. And so when we went into lockdown, of course, there was no more, like, the kids couldn't work in groups. They didn't have the equipment. And so we had to kludge together these online, like, little videos of machines packaging food or something. And we'd, you know, have a discussion about the engineering that went into that. So that part of it was kind of interesting, but really the program was kind of shut down. So that was very unfortunate, because these kids were all into it. It was hands-on. They got to work with each other. They just loved it. And so afterwards, you know, kids, maybe like the kind of higher functioning kids, would show up to a meeting and you could see their faces. But the kind of lower, you know, not quite so engaged kids, or who could be distracted easily. And what happened to them was that they would post an emoji or something. So if they showed up, just a little emoji or something. And then, you know, that was it. They weren't really there. They were doing something else. So I would say, you know, if we're serious about doing like engineering and hands-on and things like that, which we want to do, because, you know, it's the 21st century education.
Right.
It was challenging.
Yeah, I'm sure it was very difficult. Julie, thank you so much for your reflections. Just sort of a difficult circumstance all around. I want to ask our roundtable super quickly about the idea of matching instruction to where students are at. And I was wondering if it was easier to do in this circumstance. The education-y term sometimes is differentiation. Was it easier to you know, adjust your teaching to that level? I'll kick this question in the about 3 minutes that we have left. I'll start with Jessica Gutierrez, who teaches at Santa Monica High School physics and chemistry. Jessica, was it easier to sort of meet student, like, individualized, personalized instruction and match where they're at?
I mean, yes and no. I think the beginning, of the year, we see where students' levels are and their skills. It took a little longer to do that this year, just because the nature of Zoom, the fact that we were on a block at my school where we normally have a modified block, so we weren't seeing kids as much. Once I kind of got to know where they were at, I think we were able to make it work, you know, with like group activities and different things to buy in. Once we were back at school in the spring, I think definitely meeting them where they're at. And just, I think there was a point in the year where we kind of all accepted the fact that we weren't going to get through as much as we do in a normal year.
And I in the cut the fat sense of what we were talking about before, it's like there's less of a, there was less, we were teaching less, we were covering less ground.
Yeah. And we kind of all, a lot of colleagues at my school said, you know, kids' mental health is more important than them learning physics, chemistry, and this year. So just like finding ways to engage them and like thinking of them as a whole person versus just learning our subject matter.
I'm curious about how Ashley McGrath, who's a kindergarten teacher in Roland Unified, approached that. I mean, you're in a different situation than with a subject matter specific course like physics or chemistry and trying to meet students where they're at. Was it easier or harder to individualize instruction for your kiddos, Ashley?
I think it was just different. Our district really focused on care, connection, and compassion before content. And so we could do on Zoom, you know, small groups. These five kids are going to come on at this time. I'm going to do one-on-one with this child. I'm in a kindergarten because we teach all of the subjects. In that way, we had the ability to really differentiate instruction because kids could come together and work on the same thing at the same time. But we always celebrated together. And I think while we were able to differentiate instruction just as probably as much as we could in person, I think that we were able to celebrate not just our class together, but because we were on Zoom, all 14 of our elementary schools could come together on one big Zoom and we could have a rock concert. We could have authors come in and visit with us. And so, yes, differentiation, but celebrate together.
I want to thank our teacher roundtable this afternoon that has joined us. It's almost afternoon. I guess it's morning still. But I want to thank them in any event for joining us and tackling a really big question. What about distance learning do we want to keep going forward in schools across California and across the nation? And what do we hope never comes back? This is California is approaching a fall in which in-person, five-day-a-week instruction is likely to be the default. So let me do a roll call quickly. First of all of the folks, the teachers that called in with very sharp insights on their classrooms. And then on our roundtable, Sonia Carney, of fifth grade and sixth grade teacher in Irvine Unified, Miguel Covarrubias at Cortinez School of Visual and Performing Arts in downtown Los Angeles, Jessica Gutierrez of Samo High, Ashley McGrath of Roland Unified, a kindergarten teacher, and Greg Knotts of the California State University Northridge, a professor of elementary education. Sharon McNary will be with you on Air Talk tomorrow and the rest of this week. In for Larry Mantle today, I'm Kyle Stokes. Have a good afternoon.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win, and the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.